You mentioned testing. Mm-hmm. Another thing that changed while you were in office, Georgia withdrew from PARC, the National Testing right. Consortium aligned with the Common Core. They're implementing, as you said, Georgia Milestones next right. year. The idea of the new test is to sort of move away from the strictly multiple choice
yes.
way of testing to get students to think more critically, explain their answers, have open-ended questions. Will Georgia Milestones be able to achieve what PARC intended to achieve?
Yes. And what a lot of people don't know is that what we have created with the Georgia Milestones is a system that will not only tell us how our students are doing in Georgia, but we will also be able to make a national comparison. Even though we're not in PARC, our vendors for our new test, what we will be doing is embedding within the assessment norm reference test items. So our tests have always been criterion reference for the last 10 years, whether it's the CRCT or the EOCT. And a criterion reference is simply it measures how our kids are doing on our stuff. You can't really go beyond the state. But what we're doing is it really a blended test that is some – it's criterion and norm reference. So parents will actually get two scores. Their child will get a score on how they did overall on the test, but then they will have a norm referenced test score that says to the parents and communicates to them how their child is doing in comparison with the rest of the nation.
So they'll get a score, criterion reference score, which tells them how they did in Georgia. Mm-hmm. They'll get a norm reference score telling them how they compared nationwide.
Yes.
Got it. I did want to ask you another testing question, because when you and I have spoken before, you have expressed concern for sort of over-testing kids.
Yes.
But Georgia does test kids in more subjects than what the federal government requires.
We do.
So is that a way to kind of cut back on the high-stakes testing? Could Georgia scale back on its testing a little bit?
That would involve the legislature, because okay. the testing that we have is all built into state law. What we have been able to do with our new test is because we have so much of the selected response items built in, not select, the constructed response where students have to write. We're actually going to be able to generate writing scores for students as well from those tests. And therefore, we will be eliminating the third grade writing assessment, the fifth grade writing assessment, the eighth grade writing assessment. And we are looking at, and this will require the State Board of Education to adopt a policy change, but also phasing out the 11th grade writing exam because that's built into the graduation rule that requires a rule change. But because we have so much writing taking place on the exam, then we can generate those writing responses and cut back on some of the testing that we do.
Okay. So they are cutting back to some degree.
Yeah.
State is cutting back.
But aside from that, you know, we are testing science and social studies, and the federal law doesn't require that we do that. And really, there is no state chief out there that I know that supports the high-stakes testing at every grade level that we do. We would love to – I'll speak for myself. I would love to see a model where we test at a high-stakes measure like this once in elementary school, once in middle school, and once in high school. And then you let the states do our own benchmark assessment leading up to those to make sure our kids are ready.
As you look back at your time in office, as superintendent, is there anything that you're most proud of?
You know, I think that I would be most proud of the work that we have done to bring business and industry to the table, the development of the Career Pathways Initiative, getting students and parents to think about you know, their lives beyond high school and to plan, because, you know, I think that we can do a better job preparing students for life after school, after, you know, K-12 education, and we just haven't. And so we have developed over 100 career pathways. We have over 200 new high school courses. We have career education in elementary school and middle school. And I would probably throw in the CCRPI and the waiver from No Child Left Behind, because we've been able to include so many of those things as part of the accountability system. It's like we now have an accountability system that makes sense, that helps drive the work we do.
Is there anything you would do differently?
Oh, my goodness. I think probably the most frustrating part to me is how politicized education is in this state. And so in doing things differently, maybe be more prepared for that on the front end and, you know, have ways to deal with that and handle that. But quite frankly, I have been very pleased with the work that we've done. I think that, you know, education has really made some significant strides forward in the last 4 years. I think Georgia is, and even though people in this state might not realize it, but, you know, I travel the country quite a bit, and Georgia is recognized outside of the state in so many ways that most people don't realize.
Speaking of the political piece, do you feel like that lack of preparedness was maybe because your background is an educator and not a politician, and when you run for office, there are things that you just don't expect?
Yeah, and I'm disappointed that there are people in the political realm that are policymakers that are making decisions that impact our teachers and our students, that don't understand education, that don't know how their policies impact, that think that their ideas are solutions, and they're not solutions at all. They're creating more issues for us. And so disappointed in that there's not more of our policymakers that really want to work with educators to develop solutions that are best for our students.
It sounds like you might be hinting at the idea that some politicians may support certain educational policies to score political points, maybe?
And yes. Yep.
You decided against a second term as superintendent so that you could challenge the governor mm-hmm. in the primary. The governor won soundly. I mean, he won yep. by a pretty wide margin. Do you regret that decision now? Do you regret running for governor?
I don't. I mean, I will miss this work, but honestly, education had to be brought to the forefront in this discussion. There was just not the concern from the governor's office for education. In the 3 years, you know, leading up to the election, there'd been nothing but cuts to education. And when we have entire school districts that are months away from bankruptcy, and there's no plan. There's nobody in the legislature or in the governor's office that has a plan on how to address a bankrupt school district. You know, the discussion had to be elevated, and that was the best way, in my opinion, to elevate the discussion. And I think positive things came from it. We have over $300 million added to QBE that's going to help schools maybe come back around and restore 180 days to their school calendars. And I think that I think it was absolutely beneficial for kids and for school districts. My career, you know, maybe not so much, but what's most important to me, those students and those teachers and those communities, because education is economic development. It is our future, and our kids are way too important to not invest in.
You mentioned the budget cuts leading up to the election year. Could that have just been a reflection of the economy? The economy wasn't doing very well.
You could say that, but when you look historically back over across state agencies that had their budgets cut over the years, you can also see most of those agencies having their funds restored except for education. And you know, it's you have to prioritize, you know, and when we spend, you know, hundreds of million dollars for athletic facilities across the state, and we're giving away, between $3 and $4 billion in tax incentives. I mean, there are monies there, but you have to prioritize education.
As you're leaving office, which I know isn't until January, but do you have any advice for the incoming superintendent?
Advice for the incoming superintendent: listen to your teachers, listen to the boots on the ground, work as best you can with other policymakers. For me, when I go home, I have to be able to look myself in the mirror and say I did the best for kids. Because that's what I'm elected to do. You know, I'm not elected to play politics. I'm not elected to necessarily make people under the Gold Dome happy. I'm elected to run education. And as state superintendent in Georgia, you're elected to make the best possible decisions for our students. And that's what needs to be at the heart of every decision you make, is what is best for our kids.
And on that note, do you have an endorsement for the state superintendent race?
I will tell you that Mike Buck, being my chief academic officer, I know that he is well-versed in the work. I know that he understands the work. He has over 32 years' experience at every level of education. He's a man of great character, a man of great integrity. And because I know him the best of all the candidates, that's who I support.
Those are all of my questions, but is there anything I didn't cover that you wanted to add about your time in office?
Well, I'll say, you know, there's so much that we have done. You know, we have getting back to the Career Pathways Initiative, we have engaged business and industry at in such a fashion here that we have companies like Siemens, you know, that are at the table. They're providing curriculum for us. They're working with our curriculum specialists to make sure that our courses have the standards in them that they're looking for. You know, we're working with Georgia Power. Georgia Power has been incredible at helping us build out our energy cluster of courses. We have established some marvelous relationships with the Georgia Chamber, and I think that, you know, I was at a national conference last week, and out of 50 states, there was one state that was highlighted as really leading the nation at defining career readiness, and it was Georgia. And so there's some tremendous things going on there. We've implemented an international initiative where we have memorandums of understanding that didn't exist before with places like Saxony, Germany, and Bavaria, and Baden-Württemberg, Germany. We have MOUs with Korea. We're regularly hosting Korean educators here. There's so much that's going on. We have probably about a dozen now dual immersion schools in our state where students are learning foreign language in elementary school. And we're on track to reach our goal of having 20 of those in place in the next few years. So there's, outside of all the policy and the things that have gone on the state level, you know, there are so many other things that are happening that are benefiting our kids.
If the Career Pathways program stays in place, which, I mean, there's no reason to think that it wouldn't, but if your successor, you know, keeps it going and stays committed to it, do you expect to see graduation rates going up?
I do, and they will stay with it unless the law changes, because it's actually in state law now. House Bill 186 was signed by the governor, I think his first year in office, actually went into effect last fall. Because what the Career Pathways does is it provides relevance. You know, when you look at the dropout rate across the nation, you have over 1 million kids a year that drop out of our high schools before graduating, and they self-report overwhelmingly the number one reason that they quit is they just don't make the connection. They don't see the relevance of high school. It's boring. It's unrelentingly boring, and it doesn't, you know, that's not what I want to do. And so when you can hook a child into, when you can find out what their interest is, and then you can build an educational opportunity for them around that interest, and you can help them see how math makes sense in automotive service technology, or you can help them see how math makes sense in health occupations, or in being a nurse, or being a chef on a cruise ship, then they learn math, and they are more apt to stay in school because they can make a connection, and there's something there that they enjoy.
As you leave in January, what's next for you?
You know, I don't know. There are a lot of options out there on the table. It'll be a matter of just making the right choice. So there are a number of opportunities. And you know, right now my focus is we still have a lot of work to do. But I'm not too worried. The right thing will be there.
So you've already received offers then, I guess?
Numerous.
Numerous?
Yes.
Okay. So I guess we'll have to wait to see what those might be.
I'm keeping all my options open at this point. I have plenty of time to make a decision. I'm not going to rush into one. So,
outgoing State School Superintendent Dr. John Barge, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you very much.